And many verses for Friday, January 27th, 2017. If you missed any part of the show or would like to hear it again, share it with your friends and your family. You can find it online at kboo.fm/onelandmoneyvoices. Thank you for joining us today. Be sure to tune in every fourth Friday on the month at 9 a.m. I'm your host, Mohammed Abdul.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, unless otherwise noted. The Community Advisory Board will meet Tuesday, August 27th at 6 p.m.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Feet to the Fire campaign and protest, Wednesday, August 28th at 11 a.m. at the Clackamas County Courthouse in Oregon City. The Feet to the Fire campaign is part of a national campaign started by Protect Our Stolen Treasures out of Detroit. This peaceful protest happens every month outside a different county courthouse and calls for justice for those lost to police violence and hate crimes. Again, that's Feet to the Fire campaign and protest, Wednesday, August 28th at 11 a.m. at the Clackamas County Courthouse, 807 Main Street in Oregon City. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And this is KBOO Portland. It's 10:01 a.m. We're going to jump right into Voices for the Animals.
The more compassion we have towards animals, the more compassion we're going to have towards other people.
If you can value them all, you really value yourself as well.
So even if you don't care about animals, the things we do that hurt animals end up hurting ourselves.
It's almost kind of a dominion type issue where we feel we need to control everything.
Dominion means stewardship, to take care of.
What would a cow think about satisfying our habit? The challenge lies with looking at suffering from the perspective of the person or individual suffering.
Hello and welcome to Voices for the Animals. I'm your host, Michelle Coppola. I share hosting duties with Noah Bristol and Julianne Schwartz, who you heard on last month's episode. We're here every fourth Friday of every month at 10 a.m. So since I'm a relatively new host here at KBOO and the new host on this show as well, I guess I should tell you a little bit about myself. I'm a middle-aged woman who spent the majority of her career in the radio business. I've always kind of worked a side hustle as an animal shelter rescue welfare volunteer for 20-plus years. I've done my share of protesting at facilities where unnecessary animal experimentation was happening. I've also done it at hoarding locations. I fostered more dogs and cats than I can name and even took in a few stray men. But that's for a different show, I guess. I also spent many years volunteering with Fences for Fido. They're a local organization that builds fences for dogs who live outdoors on chains. Wonderful organization. We'll have to talk to them sometime. And now I am here at KBOO, where I guess feisty old radio people come to join the resistance. I'm especially pleased to be one of the new hosts of Voices for the Animals because there's really no other program like it on the air locally that I'm aware of, and I love the opportunity to be a voice for the voiceless, and we are very glad that you have decided to join us and be here as well. Now, we have a really important show for you today, especially if you happen to love horses. Now, even if you don't have a proclivity for our equine friends, you do not want to miss this interview because it's with Brianna Schwartz. She is the policy counsel for the American Wild Horse Campaign. We're going to be talking to her about what the federal government has been doing to our nation's wild horses with your tax dollars. And if you're an animal lover, you're probably not going to be real happy about it, I can assure you. But we will also give you a way for your voice to be heard so that you don't feel frustrated about what's going on without being able to take some action if you're so inclined. First, however, I want to begin today's show with our Animal Action Calendar. This is a list of local and regional events where you can support animal welfare and animal rights. Coming up on Sunday, September 22nd, there is going to be a vegan beer and taco social put on by Try Vegan PDX that's happening at Lagunitas Community Room in Portland from 4 to 7 p.m. If you've been vegan curious or, you know, just want to dip your toe into the vegan lifestyle, it sounds like a great place to enjoy yourself. And, you know, have some great beer and tacos with friends, all right? Again, that is Sunday, September 22nd, 4 to 7 p.m. at Lagunitas Community Room. Saturday, September 28th, from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., the Humane Society of the United States is going to be holding a summit on advancing animal protection through local ordinances. That's happening right around the corner from KBOO here at the Jupiter Hotel on East Burnside. Now, if you're wanting to get involved with animal advocacy, especially on a local level, which is where it really begins, then this is definitely an event you want to go to. You'll meet people there who are involved in fighting puppy mills, roadside circuses, cruel wildlife practices, and to work to protect dogs that are living outside. Whatever you're interested in most, you can get inspired and network and meet other like-minded animal advocates. Again, that's Saturday, September 28th, 10 till 3, Jupiter Hotel. And on the weekend of October 5th and 6th, the 15th annual Portland Veg Fest is going to be happening at the Oregon Convention Center. This is always a really fun event. It's another way to get all the info and support you need if you're moving towards or are already living a vegan lifestyle. They have cooking demos and speakers and booths and food tasting and lots of stuff for kids too, all right? So that is October 5th and 6th. You want to mark your calendar for that. And if you need information on any of these events, if you want more details, you can actually go to the Voices for the Animals Facebook page. Just search Voices for the Animals, KBOO, K-B-O-O, at Facebook.com to get more info on these events and other ones as well. So that sound you're listening to is the sound of wild horses in eastern Oregon being chased and rounded up by the U.S. Bureau of Land Management, the BLM, in what can only be described as a stampede of terror and panic. You can actually see some of those videos on YouTube if you want to look them up. Now, a little bit of history for you. These wild Mustangs are the ancestors of horses that have been part of the American West since before it was the American West. They've been on the continent for a long time. Others trace their lineage back to when horses were turned out to fend for themselves after farmers and ranchers and stagecoach drivers moved on to tractors and trucks. They were protected somewhat by a couple of different laws. There was a federal law in 1959 that protected them after public outcry, and then a historic law in 1971 called the Wild Free Roaming Horse and Burro Act. Now, I am sad to say that these poor horses have been a lightning rod of controversy ever since. And now the BLM, who oversees the management of these lands and the horses on it, and the wild burros as well that you sometimes see in Nevada, they are considering a controversial plan for permanently sterilizing the mares. And that brings us to our guest today, who I'm really excited to talk to. With us via phone is Brianna Schwartz. She is the Government Relations and Policy Counsel for the American Wild Horse Campaign. Brianna, thank you so much for being here to talk with us about this important issue. I have so many questions, but I'm going to start off with this one. Can you expand a little bit on the history I gave earlier about how these horses came to be here? I mean, are these Mustangs now considered indigenous to the land, and what's our responsibility to them?
Sure. So horses were here millions of years ago and were simply reintroduced by the European settlers. So the horse itself has ties to North America, and there's quite a few studies out there that confirm this. However, the BLM tends to cling to recent history of stock horses that the settlers let go wild. But honestly, either way you slice it, the American Mustang is a key part of American identity in our settling of the West and our nation's history. And even today, over 80% of Americans want to see them humanely managed and protected. And that's part of why the Wild and Free Roaming Horses and Burros Act was passed, was because of an outpouring of support by the American people to see these horses protected from the rustlers that were brutally rounding them up and killing them.
Right. So, you know, and honestly, really, given the amount of support that still remains for them, it's amazing that they're being managed the way they are. Can you talk a little bit about how the BLM is managing the horses these days?
Yeah, so every year the Bureau of Land Management, or BLM, they round up thousands of wild horses and burros en masse from our public lands all throughout the West. They brutally stampede the horses by helicopter most times and separate families and ship them off to government holding facilities where they await adoption or sale, and they're never wild again. So this is all happening because the wild horses have to compete for their resources with commercial interests such as livestock, grazing, oil and gas, and mining, all within their federally designated habitats.
So let me ask you, why is the BLM being allowed to use helicopters when it seems that the laws specifically forbid their use in rounding up horses, right? Aren't they supposed to be free from harassment and use of transport and airplanes and so forth?
So in the Act, it does reference protecting the horses from capture, branding, harassment, or death, but the law doesn't explicitly say that the BLM can't use helicopters. So when the Wild Horse Act was passed, it was enacted at a time that mustangers and ranchers and cowboys were taking it upon themselves to brutally round up the wild horses and burros and ship them off for pet food and glue and those sorts of brutal things. So that was more what that language was referencing.
At this point, I mean, let's talk numbers a little bit. How many horses are currently on public lands, estimated, obviously, and how many are being held in corrals throughout the country by the BLM?
So the BLM estimates that somewhere in the low 80,000 range are out on the range today, and that number is put together by estimating a 20% population increase per year. It's hard to tell exactly how many horses are out there. Many census documents are not done every single year in every single HMA, so of course it's an approximate number. Mm-hmm. But in holding, they also have about 51,000 wild horses and burros that are permanently living in government holding facilities. A lot of them don't have adequate shelter. There are internal standards that the BLM is supposed to abide by, but we've seen some cases where those aren't exactly being followed as far as humane management and feeding and cleanliness of the corrals themselves.
What I want to find out is, how much is this costing the U.S. taxpayer at this point to round up and to care for these horses long term?
So quite a bit, actually. Looking at fiscal year 2019, the BLM spent 70% of its budget on holding wild horses in captivity. And so that breaks down to about $42 million taxpayer dollars.
So in this part of the country, we see lots of adoption events of wild horses, and I know they happen in states throughout the West, but I know also that the BLM was actually caught selling some of these horses to kill buyers for slaughter in the past, and that's not supposed to happen either. Is it still going on, to your knowledge?
So it did happen. Between 2009 and 2012, there was one specifically egregious incident that set precedent in the program. So Tom Davis, which was a rancher and was purchasing horses through the agency, was later investigated by the Office of Inspector General, and he was purchasing the horses and selling them to slaughter. Once that was discovered and confirmed, the BLM put out an internal policy to limit the number of horses that people could buy to 4 horses. Funny enough, last year the BLM overturned this policy, different administrations, and now allow people to purchase up to 26 horses at a time. And the new policy only lasted for about 8 months. You know, but the public was just completely outraged. Finally flipped it back. This internal memorandum is a little bit of a gray area for the BLM. A purchaser or adopter has to sign a contract, that's the sale with limitations idea, that they will not intend, they're not purchasing the horse with the intention of selling it for slaughter. They're not adopting the horse for that purpose. But the government doesn't follow through.
Right.
We find a lot of mustangs across the country in kill lots. before they cross at auctions and those sorts of things. We do have a rescue fund to our organization for that purpose, and we work with other organizations in order to save those Mustangs when they are found, if we can.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about long-term management, of course, because they're competing with commercial interests for the rangeland. The BLM is saying, you know, we really need to keep them from multiplying because they are going to starve. Nobody wants to see the horses starve on the range. So they have come up with this sterilization program. The sterilization program is in these experimental phases, from what I understand, and it's something called ovariectomy via colpotomy. Hopefully I'm pronouncing that right.
So essentially, it's a completely blind procedure. The surgeon feels around within the mare, makes small incisions before extracting each ovary with what's called an accretor tool, which is essentially a rod-like tool with a chain loop on the end that's used to sever the ovary from the mare's body, for lack of a better way to say that, and extracts both ovaries, then lets the mare go. There's no sutures involved or anything like that.
So I understand that maybe this is done with sedation, but there's no pain management for the horse.
That's correct. So there is mild sedation. The mare still has to be able to stand upright in this slot, but she's awake the entire time. No epidural is given. They're monitored for roughly 24 hours as they wake up from that mild sedation. Then they're moved to a separate holding pen for about 7 days, but there's absolutely no real oversight to make sure that they're recovering correctly, and any complications are addressed other than removing them when they pass away.
Wow. Is it true that they have tried this method before and found that it was not successful?
The BLM, to my knowledge, has not tried the procedure before.
Mm-hmm.
They rely on a study from the Sheldon National Wildlife Refuge that was done in around 2008. They sterilized some mares there with the same procedure and immediately released them back onto the range, but there was absolutely no oversight, no notation of their care, pain levels, that sort of thing. But they're clinging to that study as evidence that they can use it here. The success rate is not 100%. Mares do die from this procedure. They died at Sheldon, and the veterinarian that did that study has also done it for private groups that were interested in the procedure to learn more about it, and also had high complication rates and deaths in those situations as well.
So they are essentially giving these horses a hysterectomy without any sort of pain medication. Do equine veterinarians have anything to say about this procedure and its effect on horses, or where do they come down on this, to your knowledge?
So many in the veterinarian community that we reached out to talk about the procedure with were not well-versed in the procedure. It's rather archaic. It's rather obscure. Many don't really know how it's done. It's a very old procedure. Technology has moved on and helped us, when we have to do this procedure on domestic mares, do it in a safer way or a different method. So many of the veterinarians that we spoke to weren't even familiar with it and didn't feel comfortable commenting on it. Those that were familiar with it expressed possible complication rates being extremely high, especially in wild mares that cannot be restrained from movement after the surgery, when the risk of hemorrhage is extremely high. They expressed concerns that no epidurals were being given for pain management. They expressed concerns that there was no adequate monitoring or aftercare of the mares. These were veterinarians that understand wild horse behavior and mare anatomy, and they don't think that the BLM should move forward with this procedure.
As a matter of fact, I understand that both Oregon State University and Colorado State University Colleges of Veterinary Medicine were involved in with the BLM in this project earlier on, but have now terminated their partnerships over it. Is that correct?
It is correct. OSU was partnered with the BLM in 2016 when the plan was a little different. They were planning to study three different types of sterilization, female sterilization. CSU partnered in 2018 when the BLM chose ovariectomy via colpotomy specifically. There weren't really clear reasons for either institution backing out of the plans, but I suspect that public pressure had a lot to do with it, because the public really understands what this means to the mares and what they're going to go through, and they don't stand for it.
You're listening to Voices for the Animals on KBOO Portland. I'm this month's host, Michelle Coppola, and today we are speaking with Brianna Schwartz, Policy Counsel for the American Wild Horse Campaign, about the Bureau of Land Management's proposed and controversial sterilization program for wild horses in Oregon. If implemented, this inhumane procedure could be used on wild mares throughout the West. Do I have that correct, Brianna, that they're doing this in Oregon as a test and then may implement it elsewhere?
That's correct. They've expressed that their intention is to find a procedure that they can do on the range and use as a management tool across the West.
So I understand that there are indeed more humane options for sterilization. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. Just up front, pretty much any other procedure is a little bit more humane than the one that's an extremely archaic procedure, and it's done completely blind. There's a very high risk of complication, and the study that the BLM relies upon was done in 2008, and technology has advanced since then, and had advanced at that point even.
Right.
One option to make it safer would be to use a laparoscope so that the veterinarian can actually see what they're doing to decrease the risk of hemorrhage, but the BLM has ruled that out as cost prohibitive. There are several other surgical procedures that they proposed to study in 2016 that have lower risks, but we are more comfortable with much less invasive procedures, not even procedures, honestly. They're more vaccines that can be given remotely and have effectiveness from 2 to 5 years. The one that is the most proven is called PZP. It's an immunocontraceptive vaccine, which is essentially birth control for horses.
Mm-hmm.
It can be given remotely. The horse never has to get handled. Or if the horse is already in a trap or in holding, it can be given by hand, whatever the situation may warrant. But mares carry to term. There's very low risks. Even in the dart itself, it just drops out. Very few experience any complications from that procedure. IUDs are also being investigated at this point. There's not a lot of science around those yet, but that could be a safer alternative than surgically removing a mare's ovaries.
Mm-hmm.
And there are other vaccines as well that are being developed and studied.
I mean, it would seem to me that even gelding the males would be more humane. Well, it's not really humane, but I mean, it would be easier than doing this very invasive procedure on the females. Is there a reason that's not considered at all?
But the BLM has considered gelding in a few HMAs, not in this particular case that we're discussing today, but our concern with gelding is the way that the BLM goes about doing it.
Mm.
It's, again, done in a very not sterile environment.
Right.
There's very little recovery time, very little pain management. We see this a lot because stallions are gelded before they're offered to the public for adoption. So if you go to a holding facility right after the males have been gelded, they have blood running down their legs.
Ugh.
And they're in obvious pain, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you think about that male then being released immediately onto the range, there are significant infection concerns because while it is an external procedure, you still have a wound there that is healing.
And it's still painful.
Yeah, exactly.
It's still very, very painful.
It still alters their wild behaviors, which is one of our chief concerns. The PZP vaccine in mares does not alter their behaviors. It preserves them, and things like ovariectomy and gelding alter behaviors.
What is the BLM's main argument against using these much more humane methods that obviously would have much more public support? I mean, I know they're going to say it's financial, but I would imagine that with the money they're spending on boarding these horses for life, that, you know, if they were able to get the horses to stop reproducing in a humane way, that, you know, it would be a wash, right?
You would think. But the BLM spends 0% of its budget on humane fertility control every year, and it spends, as I mentioned, $42 million on holding alone, and that's without even factoring in the roundups, which is millions more. They refuse to implement fertility control, being PZP, in a way that will actually make a difference, and you can't say it doesn't work if you don't try to use it. The National Academy of Sciences has said this is their best option. advocates are on board with this, the public is on board with this, but BLM is convinced that PZP is not a long-term option for humane management. And we can't seem to get through to them.
Are they just saying it's not logistically possible because it has to be redone every year or two and that it's just an expense issue? Is that just their only wall to it? Or does there seem to be some sort of...
Yeah, primarily.
Yeah.
Primarily, yes, because a lot of the herds are afraid of humans, right?
Right.
And so it is harder to go out there with a team like we have set up in Nevada that goes out and has darted, I think, about 700 mares on the Nevada range at this point.
Mm-hmm.
He mainly darted them with dart guns and has a whole program set up out there that the BLM could model off of. But that doesn't work for every HMA, depending on the horse behaviors there. They could set up bait traps and those sorts of things to bring the horses in, but they would rather round them up because they view that as easier and faster to get the numbers down. However, that leads to compensatory reproduction, which just means that the horses put the numbers back that the BLM just took off.
Wow.
And so they've created this emergency by continually rounding up and removing instead of implementing fertility control with their roundups. So we view it as a comprehensive plan that if they must continue roundups, they must also implement PZP fertility control so that we can together
right.
to control the management and not just continue to perpetuate the problem.
Do we have a timeline of when this proposed sterilization study is taking place? Is it already happening? Can it potentially be stopped?
So unfortunately, we don't have a timeline at this point. Originally, the BLM in this last iteration said that they wanted to begin in August. Obviously, we are well in August,
mm-hmm.
and they haven't released their final decision document yet. Once they do, if they do, release their final decision document, there's usually a 30-day appeal period where the agency cannot act on the decision. So if they release it tomorrow, we'd still be looking at 30 days from tomorrow.
Okay.
But so at this point, we are just waiting for the agency to drop that decision.
Mm-hmm.
Once it does, we will evaluate the final decision and assess our legal options. AWHC and several other organizations have been watching this procedure as it's grown and developed in the agency, and we've challenged it twice before now, and we intend to challenge it again should the BLM provide a decision document that is full of holes, as the others have been.
Okay. So someone listening to this who really wants to be an advocate for the wild horses here in the West and in Oregon, what can they do? Where can they go to get the latest information, to maybe voice their concern once the report comes out from the BLM? What actions can they take?
AmericanWildHorseCampaign.org is our website, and we have all of the information on there on how they can help. As wild horse and burro actions come up from the BLM, we put out action alerts and describe what the BLM is wanting to do, why it's harmful for horses, and what people can do to help. So if someone is interested in learning more about the issue or being alerted when this action or others come out from the BLM, they can sign up for our emails or follow us on Facebook and be alerted when those public comment periods are open so that they can voice their opinions and tell the BLM how they want their horses to be managed.
Wonderful. That is AmericanWildHorseCampaign.org. If you don't have a way to write that down right now, don't worry. We will have it on the Voices for the Animals Facebook page and also at the KBOO website at the Voices for the Animals page as well. Brianna, is there anything else that you would like people to know with regard to this issue that they should be aware of?
I just want them to know that these are your horses and burros on your public lands, and if you love horses or animals and you want to see them humanely protected, please use your voice and speak up for them. They can't speak for themselves.
Thank you, Brianna. What a wonderful way to end the show. Really appreciate your time today and for that statement, because that's really the bottom line, right? There are horses and we have a responsibility to them, and it's up to us to be their voice. Hopefully we can make some changes with the way they're managed. We do appreciate you being here as well. Thank you so much for listening. And if you want to know more about this issue, as Brianna mentioned, you can go to the wonderful and very informative website, AmericanWildHorseCampaign.org. You can follow what's happening with this issue right on that site. AmericanWildHorseCampaign.org will also have it at the Voices for the Animals Facebook page. Now, before I'm out of here, actually, we just had something come up on the Voices for the Animals radar for the calendar. Want to let you know about happening tomorrow. From 2 to 4 p.m., there is going to be a protest of Coca-Cola and Fairlife. If you're not familiar with this, there was quite an investigation done exposing the rampant cruelty of mother dairy cows and their separated calves. These are cows that provide milk to Fairlife, which is owned by Coca-Cola. There is going to be a protest that joins many other U.S. cities, such as L.A., New York City, Vegas, Houston, Atlanta, and Denver, going on at the same time. Again, that's tomorrow from 2 to 4 p.m. The location is kind of being given out as people sign up for the event, but you can find out more at the Facebook page for Voices for the Animals. We've got the event on our events calendar there, and you can get in touch with the organizers and be part of that event. And that will do it for this month's edition of Voices for the Animals. You can listen to a podcast of this program at kboo.org/voicesfortheanimals or wherever you download podcasts. Be sure to follow us on Facebook and Instagram, and we will talk to you again next month. Again, it is the fourth Friday of every month at 10 a.m. right here on KBOO. For Voices for the Animals, I'm Michelle Coppola.
And as Michelle mentioned several times, this is KBOO Portland. It's 10:30 and time for Film at 11.
Okay, Film at 11 at 10:30 as usual. We're here today with Mona Bowen.
Yeah, bring in my B game.
And we are going to be discussing mostly two movies at the second half of the show, two of the releases this week, covering more or less the issue of women and secrecy. That is the unintended theme, actually born by coincidence, for this week's show. But before we get there, we have just enough time to make a quick survey of what's going on in the world of cinema this week. What's opening today? The big ones are Angel Has Fallen, the third in the Angel series, and Ready or Not, a horror movie that we are all eager to see.
Horror comedy, we should say.
And next week, there's another one, Don't Let Go.